All right. Well, welcome to Game Chat, guys. This week, we are discussing the longest journey ever. No, just this title, The Longest Journey. brought out a few years ago. I don't remember the exact date. I'm so bad.
2000.
99. Yep. We'll just throw out dates. Yeah. We'll
feel like 99.
Yeah. 99 sounds great. Yep. Sounds great. So it has some years on it, almost, we're getting close to the
20-year mark.
Yeah, almost 20 years. Yeah. I mean, you know, next year. Okay. For some reason, I was factoring my age into that, and it wasn't working out.
Divide by zero and all that.
Yeah,
stuff,
I was so. Like, wait a minute, 34, I'm 34, so what does that, wait, it didn't work. So this game was, it's a action adventure, well, point and click action adventure of sorts, where you play April Ryan, who, kind of discovers, you know, through what she meets this crazy Cortez guy, discovers that her fate is to have a hand in, like, saving her world, as well as this other world, Mercuria. Yeah. Yeah. Arcadia. I thought it was Mercuria is the city.
Yes, that's correct. Yes. It's Arcadia.
Write that down before I say it again.
Oh, should, not to derail the conversation, but should we introduce ourselves and new people?
That's right. Okay. Well, let's just. She finds out she has powers. You know, she can create shifts, but at first she doesn't know how. But she eventually learns how to save Arcadia and her world as well. So now we'll go through the, thank you for the reminder, Chris, the introductions, as it were, starting with Franco up there, as usual.
Hey, this is Franco.
Next.
Hi, I'm Austin.
I'm Stephanie. Kevin, are you there?
Oh, I'm Kevin.
Okay.
I'm Chris.
Last but not least.
Yes.
That was really... Someday we'll get that together, guys. Someday.
Sorry, I thought we were going top to bottom, but no one was saying anything, so I was
It's okay. Seeing this is a long game, I mean, it took me... I mean, I would say... Oh, guys, I was playing it... The problem is, this game is not meant to be played in, like, just... 2 or 3 days, like it's meant to kind of play over the course of time. But I know a couple of us crammed it in over the weekend because we didn't spend the month like we should have, kind of flitting about it, you know, playing some here and there. So like Franco mentioned, you know, we kind of crammed it in like how did you put it, Frank? Like a
studying, studying for your semester finals.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like, we think that we can read the Odyssey in one weekend, but it's actually kind of impossible without wanting to gouge your eyes out. What did you guys think? So we'll go with that first. Did you guys enjoy your experience into The Longest Journey?
I enjoyed the story was excellent, obviously. Mm-hmm. Well, I shouldn't say obviously, but... I just wanted to quick say that the second we met Crow, I thought of Kevin. Kevin, I'm sorry, Kevin, you are Crow. You will always be Crow in my book.
Because you were so helpful, Kevin. That's why.
Yes. The voice similarity, I don't know why I did that, but that's...
Yeah. Well, and it probably has you know, his icon is May from, and May has black fur. Crow has black feathers. I don't know. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know. Maybe. Who knows?
No, I really enjoy this game, and as a disclaimer, I've played like all three of the Dreamfall games multiple times, mm-hmm. and you get a lot. We were talking about this earlier, but you get a lot more. I think depth from The Longest Journey after playing the other two. because it ties in like in so many ways with the others. So like I understand how it could be very, very hard going through the longest journey the first time through without having all that tie in. But
that's nice to know. Like we have one scheduled to play the second one, Dreamfall: Longest Journey, later on this year. So it'll be exciting to see. And it's good to hear that, like, you know, a series of games that kind of, like, calls back onto the games previous in the series rather than just, you know, reinventing everything, and which is nice in itself, but...
Yeah, I will say that, you know, I played the game when it first came out back in 99, and I remember spending a whole lot more time playing the game back then, because I was, you know, I guess playing it to play the game itself. Yes. Whereas this, I was kind of, you know, I was already familiar with the story.
Yes.
And I kind of just, you know, powered through it. I just threw up a walkthrough and just started like powering through the exposition, skipping through a lot of the long, drawn-out dialogue options that we had there, especially talking to the priest there, where he had pretty much a 20-minute-long speech of the history of Arcadia and, and Stark and all that stuff. And
it's so good.
And Abnaxos that you meet later.
Abnaxos comes back in both of the other two games, and he is just so beautiful.
That's perfect. You know, I'm sure that saved a lot of time to skip through. I know, I think Kevin mentioned like turning off animation, right, Kevin?
What?
You mentioned turning off the animations.
The animation skipping is so helpful.
It really is.
Because it takes her like 5 minutes to down.
So the other
she has arthritis.
The other thing, too, that I kind of found a little funny was, and I don't know if this was the same for everyone, but, you know, you double click to have her run, and then you'd hit escape to, like, skip the animation, but it doesn't actually like skip the whole thing. It just like jumps ahead like 2 seconds. You know, constantly having to hit the escape button. But the hilarious part about it was when you go to visit what's his face there, the guy with the hover chair there,
Flipper.
So as soon as you enter the garage, it cuts to a you know, a CCTV view. And it's so hilarious when you're hitting the escape button on that, because it so feels like it's like a horror type of you know, scene, because just like you see her one second, and then the next second she's over by the stairs, and it's like, I always laughed when I had to go through there because it was just so hilarious.
And that was a few times you had to go through there.
I think I
laughed whenever, you know, you guys were like, skip animations. I'm like, well, you can't really be that bad. But then as I got into like hour 12 of the game, I was like, I should have skipped animations by this point. I should just start. But then I was too stubborn to start then. And so I kept.
Because it was painful, especially when going to see Flipper. Because you double click and you're just sitting there for 40 seconds waiting for her to run across the screen.
And I'm sure it skipped it. It skipped animations like Flipper coming up, like going around to get up to you. I could have easily shaved off like 2 hours of gameplay.
That'd be interesting if somebody took a video of a playthrough and just cut the animation to tell you exactly how long it takes without the animation.
I mean,
You can actually. You didn't even actually technically actually have to hit tap escape. You could actually technically have like held down escape for the entire game and just selected the correct dialogue options and probably finished the game within like 2 hours or something. But like you wouldn't see anything. You would just be like selecting.
I mean, skipping the animations would have to. I mean, I would guess Frank would probably shave off. I mean, I'm serious. Probably close to 2 hours of game.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, that's a good estimate.
Of playtime, because I mean, there are some animations where I'm like, this is what was it? There was one area it was really bad in. I think it might have been the space station. In the later part of the game, when you're with the guy that helps you later.
Adrian?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think there's some like really like crazy things there.
Yeah, the halls are pretty long.
Yeah. That's definitely true. Yeah, and the running was only like, I mean, the running helped, but it was still only like, you know, it was still, it only cut the time down by half. So does saying things like that, Austin, since you're such a big fan of the series, does that like put a little needle in your heart of like people skipping animations and
a little bit, but it's like I get it. I absolutely get it. Yeah. Really hard to get through, like, because the first time I tried playing these in order. Mm-hmm. I tried playing The Longest Journey first. When I first got into the series, I bought Dreamfall on a whim because I think it was like on sale on mm-hmm. Steam. Like, and I just saw it. There was like no one had told me anything about it. I was like, oh, this looks interesting, and yeah. I got it. And I was like, oh wait, there's an earlier one. It's yeah. cheap too, so I'll get that. And I tried playing that one first. Oh my gosh, I couldn't.
Yeah.
Like I don't understand how you guys even made it through it without yeah. that. But when I came back and did it. There's a lot in there, and yeah, it takes yeah, a while to sure. get through. And it really helps to have be really invested in the story coming into it.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and you know, like I said before, the only reason why I really did the whole skipping thing was because mm-hmm. I had already played this previously,
yeah.
And I really just wanted a refresher rather mm-hmm. than just be like, well, you know, the game was way too long.
Right.
I'm just kind of going to go off memory, but like we said, right. I played it 20 years ago, and right. going through this, like, I forgot so much stuff,
sure.
and a lot of the stuff that I remembered was either ridiculously shorter than what I thought it was, yeah. or something completely different.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's understandable. Like, I can imagine going through games that I played years ago, that were actually similar to this, because that's you know, what I played for a long time was just point and click adventures on our old computer at the house. Yeah, like I can imagine playing those games now and being like, I'd probably just be like, I don't remember what I thought I did. And the things I do remember aren't in the game. So, yeah. But, yeah, and we've had this conversation before as far as like, these long point and click adventure games, because I think we had the similar conversation with Grim Fandango, yes, which is one of Chris Stanton's favorite games, one of my favorites too.
Sure, don't lie.
oh, was that a little sarcastic enough? Anyways, yeah, so we played that last year, I think, and we had a similar conversation during our chat with that, was that it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you played these games, you know, years ago, but when you played these games, you know, when they came out, you know, you're probably younger and you had more time to sit there. Cause like, you know, I used to play King's Quest games and Space Quest. And so I would just sit, you know, which also have like really hard puzzles. But I would just, you know, I mean, you know, I would spend like a whole month playing like one King's Quest game, or 2 months or 3 months,
yeah.
and just work on it like here and there, like go and play it, work a puzzle, you know, turn off, you know, save the game, turn it off, and go, you know, go about my business, and then come and play a bit more the next day.
Dial into AOL and look for hints if you were so frustrated.
Well, okay, no, this was before...
If you had the internet,
this was before internet. Yeah.
That was the days of going into the bookstore and picking up the game magazines and going in the back and reading it for hints and everything. So that the employees wouldn't see what you're doing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It didn't help me with math, Blaster.
Yeah, like I remember like the day that we got AOL in the house, and like that was just like, you know, an internet. It was like, oh, I can look up like how to finally beat this game, because I'm sure that there was like a point and click like I hadn't beaten yet, and I was like, yes, we can figure this out.
Or you know, if you had a little extra spare money from a birthday or something, you go to the store and actually buy the walkthrough book for the game.
Yeah, so. I never did. We never got any walkthroughs for our computer games. Yeah, we just had to figure it out just by, like, of course, like, we also had, like, three family members, like, work, like, me, my brother, and my mom, like, at the same time. So, you know, if we didn't find out something, you know, someone else would, like, hack at it for a bit and usually figure it out.
Yeah, I was the only gamer in the house, so I didn't have that luxury.
Yeah, yeah, it's rough. It's rough stuff, buddy. Yeah. But anyway, so, like, you know, we had more time to play these, and so, but now, like, it's a lot more difficult to like look at them through the right lens, because you know they were meant for that time. They were meant for that time where people had, you know, a lot more time to kind of spend, you know, playing these things, and you were younger, you know, or teenagers, and you weren't, you know, it wasn't meant for people with like jobs and with these busy schedules, which leaves you to cramming it in one entire weekend.
Which is actually, I thought of a, okay, I'm sorry, Chris.
Well, I was just going to quickly say that I think it's kind of like a twofold issue where mm-hmm. a lot of the point-and-click adventure games that we have now are a lot shorter. And I think partly of it is due to the fact that back before the internet, mm-hmm. when someone released a game, it had to be complete. There was no patching or anything like that. True. And they had a little more leeway in budgets where they could spend slightly more time on refining it than just like having something to go out and then either have more DLC as it comes along or, you know, do a patch or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I also think too that the initial fan base has grown up a little bit as well and doesn't necessarily really have the time to do these really long games.
That was a good point, Chris. I was going to say the only other thing I thought was back in those early years, you really had to rely upon story and exposition and stuff like that, because you didn't have the game engines, you didn't have the high quality graphics that you had now, so you sort of had to. And people, you know, now we're so used to the great engines and the high graphics and the quick reaction type of stuff that we're kind of spoiled. We want things to happen faster.
I think that our gaming mentality, while we can still go and enjoy types of games like this, I think our gaming mentality has changed, and where we expect things faster. And not even with gaming, with anything. You know, that's just culture now. So that's one thing to consider as well. Anyways, going back into this, and I got off on that rabbit trail. So with the longest journey, so like, you know, your main character is April Ryan. How did you guys feel about her? Did you like her as a character? Did you feel connected to her during your 20-hour journey?
I remember feeling a lot more connected to her back when I was playing. And I think coming back to it, that what was kind of sort of taking me out of her character and out of the game in some way was just the overall obvious 90s dialogue and way of talking.
The 23rd century sounds a lot like the 90s.
Yes.
Especially
with Zach.
Oh, Zach. Yes, that's what we'll get to. But, as far as April goes, like, the dialogue definitely, and that's one thing I have, like, on here is this, like, you know, I think the dialogue in general was, I mean, putting into perspective of like other things that I've played from that time period, you know, 1999, 2000, like it seems like it would be really good dialogue then, like really well constructed. It was definitely very wordy, but you know, I think for that time, you know, maybe for those that played it at that time, you know, Chris, you know, I mean, as you said, like, I think it definitely compared to things of that time that it seems like it would be good, just age and just, you know, how we consider storytelling today and dialogue today is just a little bit different.
And I'm not necessarily saying that's entirely a bad thing. It's just, kind of sort of a time capsule, you know, in a way.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, I think back in 1989, April Ryan would have been really, really hip and really cool.
Yeah. I
So, this is weird, because, like, the April that's depicted in The Longest Journey,
mm-hmm.
I feel like isn't the same April that's depicted in the next game. And sorry, what?
I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah, well, so I feel like it's not the...
No. Isn't the next game 10 years in the future, though?
It is, but it's just, like, even, like, base personality traits. Like, the April in this game, like, I was never able to really connect with her. Like, I still enjoyed the game, but she just didn't seem real to me. Mm-hmm. Like her emotions, like, her motivations seemed really artificial to me. And while, like, the reason I enjoy The Longest Journey is that, as I said, is the tie-in with the other games, but then also, like, the way it does a really good job of laying groundwork for the world that you're put into with this, like, with this universe. And so that's why I appreciate it. It was, I don't like The Longest Journey because of April or in spite of her.
Yeah. No, for sure. No, that's understandable. Yeah. Well, I'm seeing here the Dreamfall, The Longest Journey was, which is, for those listening, is a completely different, that's the next game, the second game in the series. It was made in 2006. So you have a good 7 years difference. So that might have helped. And you might have had different, I'm not sure, but you might have had different writers and stuff too for.
Yeah, this was pretty much
the second game.
I think Ragnar still probably worked on it.
Yeah,
Ragnar. Sure. But you would have, but just because Ragnar worked on it doesn't mean you'd have the same writers and the same
people definitely.
Individually working on it under Ragnar.
All that to say, though, like, I feel like that in the next game, and, like, she's much more relatable and, like, able to connect with in the next one. And so when I play The Longest Journey now, I just envision April as if she's in Dreamfall The Longest Journey.
In this nice. Game. Nice, yeah. Yeah, she was definitely, you know, but all the characters were talkative, but she was talkative as well. But, you know, I didn't find her, you know, I do have to say, like, usually when characters are really talkative, characters that you're playing, like, I find that a little annoying sometimes, but I never really found her annoying. Just maybe didn't, you know, relate to her as much as I probably should have. Yeah, actually, the designers for Dreamfall The Longest Journey is not listed as Ragnar. According to, if Wikipedia is to be trusted, designers are Jarl Schwerud. I'm probably completely...
Yeah, good luck with Norwegian and Swedish.
King Solberg.
Jarl Balsgaard?
I don't know. It's an S-C-H-J-E-R-B-E-R-U-D. Anyways, I will copy that and post it. We have some binging going on. Oh, it's standard.
Yeah, so since it's the 3rd of July, fireworks.
Oh, he was a writer for Dreamfall.
Okay, but, like, Ragnar isn't listed. Oh, no, wait. Okay, Ragnar is listed as a writer. Ragnar Turnquist and Dag Steve.
Yeah, obviously there had to be some sort of transition, because I think Ragnar was pretty much a one-man band for Longest Journey. I think he was the the only writer and the designer of the game.
Okay, yes.
Everything else was animation and
he had someone, like those, the two I just posted, even though I didn't say, those were the two writers. So Ragnar is in there, but okay, all right. Good to know. So he had a little bit of help, a little bit of assistance with the next one. anyways, yeah, so I would, you know, so how did you feel about the world that we, you know, you had Arcadia, which was the alternate universe that April gets transported into. And then you also had, oh, what was the name of her, of our
Stark.
Universe?
Stark.
Or April's universe, I guess. Doesn't necessarily mean it's our universe.
It was Stark, yeah.
So we had Stark and we had Arcadia. Stark was where April Ryan was at the beginning.
And Stark is the modern world, just in the future.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. Arcadia is kind of that kind of alternate reality that's very kind of fantasy driven in a way.
It's the world of magic, while Stark is the world of science.
There you go. That's it. That's the tagline. How did you guys feel about the cities and the area that you were in?
I liked it. It was very what's the word for it? Not steampunk, but
cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk, yes.
Yeah, yeah, Stark was, yeah.
Yeah, the Venice, I guess, felt somewhat steampunky.
Yes.
Where the Metro was more almost Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Venice,
they were probably going to that.
Yeah. Stark, where April is living, Stark, where April starts out in, has different cities, has different areas, but so does Arcadia as well. But you start out in a place called Venice, which always confused me because they talk like, because at first I was like, oh, we're in Venice, Italy. But
Wrong Venice.
But then there were also canals and everything too. So I was.
Yeah, that was a little confusing, yeah.
But
was a pain to have to watch her run through. Because everything was such a long distance away.
Oh, yeah. And then you had that middle part that was just...
Oh, yes.
Just a run-through.
Yeah,
Nothing happened there. It was just a run-through.
Well, there was the funness of the...
The what?
The people getting arrested, skateboarders getting held up by the cop.
Yeah, you had that going on. Yeah, that seemed to happen more than one time.
I guess, I was going to say, I was always getting a little worried that there's, you know, do I have to run through every area every time? Are they going to, like, slip something in there? Like, on the 13th time through there, there's going to be somebody you need to talk to or something you need to pick up, you know, that if you didn't walk through it, you weren't going to get it, you know, stuff like that.
That happened to me a lot. Like, I just could not... I had to go back for a lot of things. I was like, I tried really hard, guys, to do it without a walkthrough. There were some really seriously, like, not very intuitive puzzles in this game. So I tried really hard to do it without a walkthrough.
That but then, duck like, puzzle.
There were times that I was like, okay, I can't go anywhere. So I would look at a walkthrough, and it would be like, yes, use the screwdriver on this. And I'm like, screwdriver? I don't have a screwdriver, so I would have to go back into the walkthrough and be like, okay, where did I miss this? And have to, like, backtrack through, like, five different areas to, like, find the screwdriver or find whatever it was. Like, I had to backtrack for that rubber duck that was in the canal outside the window. And I was like, I've already looked outside my window nothing was there. But then you have to go
Drop the next day.
And when you wake up the next day, you have to look outside your window in your room and to get the, or to at least like get it loose so it goes down the canal stream. And then you have to fish it out with, I don't even remember. Like it seemed like you had to fish it out with something in particular. And then you had to use the rubber duck piece along with something else.
Oh, yeah, you have to use the clamps from that water machine there.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Because there was a key in the subway system that you had to get,
that you wouldn't notice at all?
No, I was sparking.
It's in like the bottom corner of the screen.
I thought it was just part of the subway thing. I thought it was just part of the subway. And then, like, sure enough, like, I think I had to backtrack and do all of that, like, at one time.
So, because,
yeah.
Have any of you played the Myst games?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
No.
So, yeah, like, if you've played those, you're perfectly fine with the puzzle solving in this game. So, like, because I had done those, yeah, this is kind of annoying, but it's not Myst. So.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I can see that. But still, like, I have a small issue with games. This is the same problem I had with Grim Fandango. Is I have a small issue with games that I have to use a walkthrough for. Otherwise, I would never be able to figure it out. Unless...
Well, I will tell you, in Grim Fandango, that the system to detect stuff you can interact with is very subtle.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's true. I didn't find this one as annoying. There's another word I want to use. We'll just stick with annoying as Grim Fandango as far as puzzles go. But it still was on that level of like, wow. Like I would look at the walkthrough and be like, how was I ever supposed to figure that out? Like what clues? How? Where?
Yeah, I mean, I figured some of the clamp out and. But yeah, I had to look up. And it's like after a while. Well, the story. When I start playing, I'm like, you know, the story is good enough that I don't mind being, you know, obtuse with these puzzles. I'll just look them up. I'm not even going to go off the top to get too worried about being stuck with these puzzles. I'm just going to, you know, I get one that's stuck. All right, I got like. 2/3 of the things I need. All right, I'll look up the rest. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, the talking totem poles was impossible. I don't know how anybody could have figured that out on their own. That would have been sheer trial and error. And, you know, with the animation system and the travel system, it would have just been infuriating.
Well, I mean, there was a way. I mean,
you had to go up to the cave once. Up to the thing at the top and click on the symbol and it told you which ones were what.
Yeah, you had to look inside the mouth of the face at the top of the hill and then there you could like viewfind the statues and
you still had no way of knowing what the codes should be at each totem.
And look. I think if you looked through it, you could find out.
You would know what each symbol was. You knew what the symbol stood for, but you didn't know. I didn't find anything that said, all right, that you know, except a walkthrough that said, okay, totem one has to have this code, and totem two has to have this code, and totem three has to have this code.
Right.
You know, for it to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was certainly a throwback to Myst, where it's like. I think there were like 4 meaningful codes, so times 3, that's
for sure.
You know, how many possible different combinations that is.
Yeah. And so like going into that, like was that so would you consider that your most difficult puzzle in the game? Was the totem poles?
The totem and the totem and the altar under the sea. That was I gave up on that right away.
That one. That one. It's so like what it is makes sense, but it was stupid at the same time because it doesn't make sense for like the other stuff. You had to go and make all the things look at each other, but then the other symbol on the back isn't matching with the other one.
Yeah.
And it doesn't explain why the heck those things and things, the rings had to be rotated into those positions in the first place. You just kind of rotate them.
Well, it was the opposite of what the symbol on the side was, or what that symbol was on that area. It was the opposite. That's what the walkthrough said.
Yeah.
Which walkthrough did you use?
I used the longest walkthrough ever in the journey of man. from GameBoomers.com.
Oh yeah, I used the Game Boomers one, which was really unhelpful there was like two different ones. I used one where it had like all of them split into different sections. There was another one where I think it had it all in one giant page.
Yeah, that was the giant page one. You just had to follow through as you.
Yeah, I had the other one. I'm not sure if they're different, but it was really unhelpful in the for getting Crow. Because they basically left. Basically left out like all the information for actually properly getting Crow, where you had to like properly exhaust the dialogue option.
Yes,
calling in with the favor thing.
Don't you always get Crow? I mean, is Crow an option? I mean, you
it just no, like you have to, but you have to be sure that you want Crow in the first place. You have to go and talk to people in the first place because I kept trying to get him. And they're like, I'm gonna have to think about it. I'm like, what am I missing? I just want the damn bird.
There's two key pieces of dialogue that you have to have with the librarian, I think, and you get topics that talk to the captain and the old sailor about two specific topics.
If you
don't get those two topics, you're stuck in a limbo where you just can't decide to take Crow or not.
I basically learned, even though like most video games now like have told me not to, like, or told me I don't have to, like, I basically learned that you need to exhaust every dialogue option with every person that you come in contact with ever. Otherwise, you have stuff that's not available.
In most of the game of this game, it was pretty good that it eliminated, once you talked about a topic, it eliminated that topic. But the librarian, it seemed, it left the old topics up there. Just saying again, talk to him. Again, so it got kind of confusing as what you did talk about and what you didn't talk about.
Ones you did talk about, I had again.
But the two topics were like sort of in that first one that it's like I'm not sure what I want to talk about. And
I think that I lucked across there. I think the walkthrough did tell me that you have to like exhaust all dialogue options with like this person, and then exhaust all dialogue options with this person. Because I did run into that to where I was like, well, how do I do this? Like, how do I, but then it was a problem because I hadn't, I had to like talk to someone and then go back to the library to read two more books. At first I really tried to listen. I mean, I really tried to read them, but then like four books in, I was like, okay, no, we're just fast forward.
Right.
The History of Markyria book was probably really interesting, and I took screenshots of it, but I didn't read it. It was long.
Austin's like having a mild heart attack.
What? I didn't want to read through it. I was tired.
The stories were nice.
It's what happens when you cram everything in. I think that doesn't help as much. Going into like hour 15 of like, you know, a day and a half, I was like, no, I'm not. There's no way. Sorry.
Some of the chapter pacing was really stupid. Like it was either chapter 9 or 10 was like 2 seconds. You go into Arcadia in the Markyria's docks, and then the guy shows up, and then you freak out and go into the thing. Next chapter.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
Well, that was my really the other thing I was thinking of was when we start after we get the second stone, and then all of a sudden it just compressed. It's like you go through this tremendous battle to get the first two pieces of the stone.
Yeah.
And puzzle solving, and then once you get it's like they almost I don't want to, you know, throw stones, pardon the pun, but they sort of got to this point, well, the story's getting long enough, we better wrap it up, kind of thing.
Yeah it did,
where it's
did,
like here's your other two stones, okay, you're good.
It did kind of tumble down the hill those last like three chapters, like,
yes,
you kind of, I mean, and maybe that was like them being climactic and like, you know, being like, okay, you know, this is it, you know. But
in the beginning pacing of the game, nothing happens, and it's like,
it's yeah.
Get to the point of, just
yeah.
Have something happen, anything.
Yeah. Oh, it's that slow build up that some stories
yeah.
have. You know,
they have to get you used to the engine. They have to get you used to yeah. moving around and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
make the engine.
Yeah.
The engine that they had to build themselves,
the crate,
which is why the game probably is so clunky.
But yeah, no, going, you know, I also had the whole skipping thing. I'll say really quick with the stories from the children in, was it Armenia? The Armenian children,
Alation.
It wasn't just the children; it was the whole culture. Yeah,
the mom, Alation. The child. Yeah, the mom, the child.
The stories, but those had some really good life lessons in them.
Oh, they did, yes. But that was our like 18, and I was like, I listened to the first one, but then like after like the second one went on for like. I think 12 paragraphs. I was like,
yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and I'm, all I'm thinking in the back of my head is I got two more to go.
Yeah. 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 But no, they were lovely stories. They were lovely stories.
I liked them.
Yeah. No, they were good. They were very good. I just, at that point I was a little, a little done, but they were very good. Very, very nice stories with nice, stuff in them. So anyone else have any like puzzles that really just kind of threw them for a loop that they were like, what in the world?
The cargo bay probably was a little.
Was that the one where you where you had to like put the guards on duty and off duty?
Yeah, that part was okay. It was just tedious. But if you went into the airlock and you hit the first yellow button and didn't notice the very tiny little yellow button
yes.
on the spacesuit, yes. you would end up going to the cargo bay and you wouldn't let you use the computer. I have nothing to search for. I have nothing, what are you talking about? I have nothing to search for.
Oh, yeah.
So this is super embarrassing, but the first time I tried to play this, I couldn't get past the first, like, puzzle. Like, the one with the like the twig and diverting the water stream.
Oh yeah, that's a really obscure puzzle.
It was bad.
I'm trying to remember other puzzles that were really.
I mean, I had a lot of them. I mean, there was a lot.
See, I don't mind trial and error puzzles if it's all right there in front of you. You know, in other words, it's like, okay, so
right,
four buttons
right.
and three switches.
Right. I thought the pressure thing, the pressure
yeah.
valve, to you had to, like, after you connect your ring to the wire,
yeah.
and you have to, like,
yeah.
work on the pressure. I finally, I did figure that out, but I had to, like, look up to, like, what to look out, like, you had to turn those little knobs at the bottom. But once I knew that, like, I figured that one out okay.
I got that one through most of the way. I just didn't know how to get the
relieve the pressure.
Part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got, like, it through all to the final part. I just missed, like, a specific valve or something that I added.
Yeah, there was a valve at the top that you had
yeah.
to twist.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that we've mentioned a couple of the kind of more difficult ones. It's kind of like, what? That's unbelievable.
How did everyone, like, there's a couple parts outside the puzzles where it's sort of like the game takes a quick, rapid turn. Like, when
yeah.
you come back to Stark,
mm-hmm.
and all your friends are either kidnapped or being shot, or...
Oh, my gosh. I love that part. I love it.
You just love seeing Zach.
Everybody's
getting just reward.
It got dramatic. It got really
yes.
dramatic really quickly, and I loved it. I was like, yes, this is like television. This is great.
Yeah.
It just all started happening. But yeah, so like there's this thing, like April returns home at one point in the game, returns back to her boarding house, I guess is what a good way to refer to it. And her landlady and her friend Emma are there, like being held up by this guard and by Gordon
yeah.
Who is kind of the made to look like kind of a bad person in the game at this point. And so, you know, and they end up shooting your friend, and they, you know, you run upstairs past them somehow. They don't see you. You run upstairs, and Zach's at your door, and I think they shoot Zach as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
Good riddance.
I know, really.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Zach was way over the top.
I needed a cold shower after...
just a good cleansing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did you guys go on the date with him, or did you?
You guys didn't want to go on a date with him.
No, I stood him up.
Well, I get it. I'm
sorry, those are the only kind of men I date.
I read what he does when you try to go on a date with him, and I'm like, nah, I don't want that to happen.
What does he try to do, Kevin?
He tries to, you get drunk, and he tries to heal you up or something.
Tries to roofie you, yeah.
No!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was like, nah, I'm not gonna let that happen.
Does April kick him? Does April, like, hit him? Does April get
back? No, she kicks him, she either, like, kicks him or, like, hits him in the nuts or something.
I really wish I would have done that then. I really wish I would have done that, just to experience this. What date was that? Goes wrong.
Yeah, I did it because at that point I was sort of, like, RPing her as being a person of her word. You know, being
She,
at that point, she's pretty much seemed to be like, you know, I mean, I went back to the cafe to work the extra shift and all that stuff, so.
Wow, I did none of that. I didn't say that I would go back and work. When it got to the date, I was like, heck no, I'm not going. There's no way in heck I'm putting myself in that position. But I kind of wish I did, because I kind of would want to kick him in the neck. Go ahead, Kevin.
I kind of wonder, curious as to what happens at, do you end up having a different animation if you end up saying that you're going to work that night at the cafe instead of watching the movie?
Oh, yeah.
If you stay to work at the cafe, you get the little troll shows up out of the jukebox.
Oh.
No.
Wait, doesn't that end up happening later on again?
The person.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, because I had that happen, I think, at a later time or something. saw it in, like, my animation.
Yeah, no, I didn't get that at all. Because if you stay, if you don't work, and you stay and watch the movie with Fiona and Mickey, you stay and watch the movie, and we have fireworks going on, currently. But, if you stay and watch the movie with Fiona and Mickey, it turns like you're watching the movie late at night, you're reaching to get some, like, I'm guessing it's like M&Ms, I guess, at least that's what I wanted it to be. And all of a sudden it turns into like this jungle, like the room does. Like,
oh, okay.
It's dark in the room, you're all watching.
I think it was popcorn.
It was colored. It was different colors, I swear.
Oh.
I swear.
Okay.
Anyways, and so it turned into this big jungle, and you're just like, what? And then you wake up.
Yeah, if you work at the cafe, the little mole person comes out, plays the flute, and everybody in the bar sees him. So,
Fiona.
So everybody's see the jungle. Yeah, everybody's at the bar. Then I guess it's just switched.
Because Fiona, and she's like.
Yeah, in this scenario, you talk to Charlie, and he's like, "What the hell was that?" You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I thought the Charlie got the short shift there. He's like, they were playing him up in the beginning, and then just.
That much.
Even
though they alluded to him loving April, like they loved her, and I was like, "Oh, well, we're going to see more of Charlie eventually."
Exactly. No, that's what I thought.
Did. And eventually, I just forgot about Charlie.
Yeah. we never know what happened to Charlie.
It's because she belongs to Zach.
Okay. What? No. Okay.
What?
No. For a second, I was like, "Oh, it must be someone in the second game." No. No.
To misquote the Pulp Fiction, Zach's dead, baby. Zach's dead.
Oh, Zach. Or so we think.
Yeah.
No.
Emma wasn't dead, but you know.
Right.
April's relationship is, it, as far as like relationships, April doesn't really, well, she sort of quasi pursues one later, but it's like not, it's not at all clear. Like right, Zoe has a very, very clear relationship in the next two games, like the main character of
I'm glad. Well,
but April really doesn't, so.
I'm glad. You know, yeah. let April live her life.
Yeah,
you know,
she was only 18. I mean, she was, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as far as you, since we're talking about characters, did you guys have like a favorite side character? It was Zach, wasn't it? Zach was your favorite. Mm-hmm. Okay. No. All right.
My favorite side character.
Yeah. Your favorite, like besides April Ryan, like did you have a favorite?
Crow.
I think it's Crow. I like Crow a lot.
Crow with a flipper, Crow. A close second.
He's great, and he's in all of them. Like, he's a very central character in all of them. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Crow. Frank, what did you say? You said Crow was second, but who was first?
No, Crow was first, and okay. Flipper was a close second.
Flipper was a polymath, but he was fun.
He's consistently April's closest friend. Like, she knows that she can always depend on him. Yeah, Crow.
Oh, well, I mean, well, in the end, at the end of the game, it showed April and Crow together, like when they're like all old and decrepit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not confirmed, but somebody said that if you go look, I think that scene or something or that animation, it's the file name is Old April. So what? It's like the file name in the folder. For that particular scene, April. Yeah, okay. Like the animation is Old April, so nice. It's like okay, so they're pretty much
nice.
Somebody was concerned enough to go digging into the system.
Cortez was interesting. First, you think that he's just this like bum, and then like you know because like he's waiting for April outside her apartment, and he's spouting this crazy crap, and I'm like, oh boy, but it's another one of these people, and. But then, no, he turns into a very central character.
One of the two. Now, it was him and McAdam or whatever?
Yes.
Were they the other two dragons?
Cortez and.
He turned into dragons.
And the
evil guy.
Yeah, the business guy.
John McSomething.
I have his name written down here. Mayor, I wrote down a whole McAllen. Yeah.
So the jewels were supposed to. That's. It just struck me. The jewels were supposed to come from the dragon's eyes. So how did he get Cortez's? I don't know. It's a loophole. I'm sorry.
He got it from him when they went and put him in the giant torture chamber.
Okay. All right. I'll go with that.
Like, insane. What else are you going to go and? Take the opportunity to do just and those are kind of like other like dragons and other things like World of Warcraft, those are just kind of human forms.
The mother white dragon, the white mother dragon was cool.
Yeah, that was a nice
I feel like
nice
I was
arc.
Sad when she died, but I
yeah. But she comes back.
Is she actually supposed to be April's mother, or is April her quote-unquote daughter?
So she actually is April's mother.
That's what I thought it was supposed to be.
Yes, she actually is. And the baby that you saw is the White Dragon Reborn. The White Dragon is like a phoenix. Like it,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So.
But, yeah.
It's got to recycle. Yeah.
So. Okay, what did you guys think, since we're talking about characters, what did you guys think of Brian Westhouse?
Brian Westhouse was interesting. I enjoyed him very much, actually. I enjoyed...
Really?
Any time that I went through that area, I would stop in and talk to him. Mostly because he was half drunk when you talked to him.
Sort of.
Yeah. But, he was interesting.
I would officially cast Bill Murray in the role of Brian Westhouse.
Perfect. Friendship. This is wonderful. This is wonderful.
You can just imagine him in that leisure suit sitting there drinking his...
Oh, for sure. For sure. Austin, do you have a particular opinion of Westhouse?
He is very, very similar to two games.
He's very well. I'm sorry, you cut out.
Sorry, he's very, very central to the next two games.
Oh, okay. Really?
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. You actually play as him at the very beginning of the next one.
All right. That's cool.
Yeah. And, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, when you come back and, like, play this, so many tiny things that, like, you didn't notice. Yeah. And, particularly with West House, like, there's a lot of very, very interesting, like, subtleties that lead you to, like, figure out exactly what his goal is later. So.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's good to know. I mean, he was always interesting to talk to. He was very good at, like, giving you information, but not making you feel like you were entitled to really do what you were supposed to do. he gave you information in a very non-confrontational way, unlike, like, Cortez and, like, the priest and stuff. Like, they would give you information and make it seem like you were this amazing guardian, and you had, you know, what's up, you know. He was just very laid back about it. He was very laid back. So I kept trying to get April to drink the booze that was sitting on there beside of him, but she never would.
She was like, and she wouldn't go and invade his house, but she was fine with taking other people's stuff, just not Brian West's house.
For sure. So we were talking about the mother dragon, because, I mean, it's 10:02, but I know that we're probably running over a little bit. But what did you guys think about the, when you're at the end of the game, you kind of come to the desert, and you're walking through the desert, and you experience this illusion of sorts that kind of brings you back into your childhood and with your father? Because throughout the game, April talks about her father and how... she has a very, like, kind of an interesting relationship with her family, because she calls her mother at the police station, and, like, she seems like she loves her mother, but then, like, you know, her dad, obviously something has happened to where, like, she does not respect him, she does not want to be around him, she wanted to get out of there as soon as she could. And then, so, like, you're walking to the desert at the end, and you experience this kind of vision of you as a child, and your father standing imprisonedly before you. Gosh, those fireworks are just already outside your window.
Well, these are people in the neighborhood now.
That's so funny. There's, like, nothing. Like, mine stopped, like, an hour ago. You're experiencing this vision. So what did you guys think about that whole, you know, like, you're talking with your dad... Your dad is, like, being really imposing and really scary looking, and you show him the ring that he gave you, that you carry with you throughout the entire game, which I think is meaningful. You forgive him. Like, your child self forgives him of, like, you say, I forgive you, even though I'm just kind of like, I don't understand what warrants his forgiveness. I guess it's just April coming to terms with herself and just, like, she can't change the past, but...
I mean, it was a weird sort of dynamic in the sense that, I mean, the game wanted to have that conflict, but the way it presented the conflict was kind of odd. That it was like he just sort of was drunk and stumbled with her, and that was, I mean, I don't know if that's really cause for a lifetime worth of anguish, you know.
I kept expecting, like, it to be
something more
in the game, but it never did, except for this moment.
Right. It's like he just felt tremendous regret from tripping while he was drunk. It seemed left-handed, and it just sort of like, I think you could have written a better,
you know. Because the story was that he was holding her as a baby. He tripped because he was drunk, dropped her.
They thought she wouldn't be able to walk.
Right. And then he felt kind of jealous of her or something, because
The weird part. That was like, that doesn't connect.
And so I'm guessing like maybe it's because, which he didn't say this. It wasn't communicated, but maybe it's because she got probably a lot of attention because of all this, because she couldn't walk and she was learning how to, and then now she can walk fine. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I was a little confused as to like the basis of the entire situation. But Santa, does that come up at all in the second game?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
As I said, like I haven't completely
finished the second game. I was
Interesting. What? Oh,
Kevin?
Never mind. I forgot what we were.
Yeah, that's fine.
I originally thought it was going to be something completely different by some of the ways that the dad was talking, because he seemed really kind of creepy.
Yeah.
In a way, so I thought it was going to end up being something like did something inappropriate to her as a child, and then it's like, oh, I dropped her. It's like, what? And she was supposed to not walk again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? What? Like that? That's it?
That's thing. Weird. That was the weird. I think they could have just went with, I mean, hindsight is always 20/20, but I think they just could have went with the fact that he couldn't accept her as a daughter kind of because she was adopted, and that kind of resentment. That would have played out just as well, I thought.
Was
you know?
She adopted?
Yeah. Because she was the dragon's child. She just sort of...
Oh, right.
Right. Because the mother sort of, like, he even says it in that, somewhere in that dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
So that could have, that should have been a reason enough for the conflict. Yeah.
I think they would have peppered it in more throughout the story.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, dropping a bomb onto you at the very end of, like, this, like, the whole story. And it wasn't even that much of a whole story.
Right. If she couldn't have, like, maybe got the feeling that she was adopted or didn't feel quite right about it and stuff like
that.
I think then
the player would have felt more resolve of the issue if they would have known more about it up until this point instead of, like, this is what happened. I'm not even sure I understand what's happening now.
Totally.
So how did you guys feel about the ending, since we're kind of getting to that point? Because like you get through that illusion, you get across the sands, you get to, there's a big chasm. Crow helps you out here. You send him to look at the castle. He finds a well with some magical water. You have to send him back again for the water, which is another thing. Like you have to do things a few times sometimes. Send him back for the water. He makes like a magical bridge using the water. Because it's a chasm of nothing, and so they're clearly
The well of
Are you saying chasm?
Yes,
chasm.
Yeah, I know.
Chasm.
Lose the H.
It's fine. And so they get. She gets across there. She puts the disc into the center.
I think. Elevator. Yeah.
Right. The elevator-ish thing, and
Gordon hitches a ride.
Gordon? Oh, yeah, Gordon. I know, but what's his name helps you?
Adrian
shows up and helps you out. And then Gordon shows up. Oh, because then they put the disc in. I'm just trying to think. They put the disc in. Adrian shows up to help you.
And initially it doesn't work because she's confused. She puts her hand on it. It doesn't work.
She thought she was the guardian.
Right.
And everyone thought that she was the guardian, the new guardian. But she is not.
No, she is not.
And
you are not the guardian.
And so then Gordon Freeman shows up. Gordon shows up and, he's kind of, his typical self at first, very, you know, cold and, evil-like. But then you use the medallion on him, the talisman you have that was given to you. And his, because like the whole thing is that he was kidnapped, like he was born as the guardian, but then he was kidnapped. He was torn into two pieces, into two kind of like parts. One was chaos and one was what we know as Gordon. And then
the Vanguard do that to prevent him from becoming the guardian.
Exactly. Good. And so then you using the talisman on him at the end forges those two sides together once again, and he's suddenly good. Like, he's suddenly the guardian that everyone's been waiting for. And more than happy to take on the role.
Slightly, you know, disappointed that they didn't show him, like, taking the guardian role, you know, like, being transfixed or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I was hoping for that, but that's no big deal.
Yeah, so April just kind of walks away.
Like, what now?
She kind of, I mean, we have a second game, so it's fine. But, yeah. If I just had this game to go off of in 1999, I would be like, what?
Well, yeah, I think, Chris, you could speak to that, because I'm sure they didn't have that game, the next game set up, so it's like when you got done in 1999, what did you, like, feel?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I don't remember exactly, but I was kind of, I don't want to say satisfied, but felt like there needs to be more. Yeah, and then when I did find out there was going to be another one, I was excited.
Went out
and bought it and installed it, started playing it, and then there was one part in the game that was just frustrating me. So I stopped, and I've been meaning to pick it up ever since. And just never got around to it.
Well, now you have a reason to. It was definitely and I could see that, you saying that, like, playing it, getting to the end, feeling kind of like you wanted more, and then, like, it's like, wait, surprise, there's more. That'd be good. That'd be a good feeling. Very good feeling. Pretty good. So what would you guys, since we have those who haven't played the second game, what would you like to see or is there anything that you would like explored in the second game? Combat. Yes, exactly. I was thinking the exact same thing.
Well, you're in luck, because the next one has a Call of Duty.
Oh, thank God. Kevin, you want to say something? I'm excited to hear that there is more about the April ones and the second one, because I wasn't sure or if it just went to someone else.
Right. More about what?
That there was more April Ryan in the second one.
Yeah, you're right. So there's more there's more April, like, the next game is split between April Ryan, Zoe Castillo, and Kian Avane. And so you play, also Brian Westhouse at the very beginning. Right. So it's like four people. But Brian is like a really short time period. And it like constantly does the thing, like when you get to like a huge turning point in one person's like path, you swap over to the other person. So it tells the story really well.
Good. Good.
And I think you guys will absolutely fall in love with Zoe. I completely did. So
awesome, like Zoe. That's the
deciding. I would have thought it'd be nice if April had sort of morphed or became sort of like a Cortez like figure, where she's like assisting both worlds, and you know, adventuring that kind of way.
Yeah. She did. She seemed to.
To
get along in both worlds. Like
she adapts well.
Easily. Although of course the writers had to make her that way, you know.
Yeah.
So she wasn't just all over herself. But
I just found out what the heck the purpose of the stupid organic leaf was, because I had it with me to the end of the game and didn't do anything with it.
Leaf? I didn't even pick up an organic leaf.
That's a cheap
organic plastic leaf. You're supposed to plant it in the city green, and it'll open up the book of Longest Journey's Book of Secrets.
Interesting. Well, I mean, you get the Book of Secrets on your. You get the concept art and stuff on your main screen. That's the Book of Secrets. Oh. Maybe it's a different Book of Secrets. Is it a concept art book or no? Do you know? No. Okay.
No. That and her.
It has audio outtakes.
No, I got that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get that when you end the game. Period. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe you just have it.
I think it was. It probably was part of the original game or something.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so.
Yeah, the other thing was the picture with you and your two friends. You didn't do anything with that. I was carrying that the whole game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just thought about that as well. I'm so glad that we got that freaking monkey out of our inventory.
I was carrying. I picked it up and was carrying it with me to the end of the game, thinking that I would probably end up using it again.
You had to use it as the shadow. You had to use it there.
I know, but I picked it up again, and I thought I was possibly going to end up using it again.
Oh gosh!
Oh, I didn't even think to try.
I left it there to burn.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
Did anybody else find it hilarious that she goes and spikes the guard's coffee with
that part was great.
Like four pills of Viagra.
I was kind of worrying like what was going to happen, like God, what they were going to show.
Madame Pleasure's spa is open at this hour.
he just ran off to it.
Yeah, to a whorehouse. That was the other thing too. There were parts of this game that were kind of very adult.
Yeah. Well, the game is rated M.
Well, I mean, it was pretty adult for the demographic of these types of games back in 99.
This is true.
There were a lot of F words, and I was like,
I was surprised that April, there was the one option where you can, where you have the option to, he asks you where the Guardian's Gate is, and you can say that it's in England. It's in England, which is an allusion to where the guy who wrote the book The Longest Journey, a very long time ago, lives. But she doesn't actually tell us drop an F-bomb when saying like, I'm a patient woman, so screw off. And which is why I didn't pick that up, because like it would have made more sense for her to actually tell him that at the at that point in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, of course we're saying, Flipper was pretty salty at times too.
Oh, yeah. Flipper was definitely salty. Zach used a lot of colorful language. Bless his heart.
Bless his heart? You mean I hope he has a heart attack?
At some point, yes. So we're a little bit past, so we'll go ahead and wrap up. Very long game, but I think we got a lot in. So what we do for Austin that's here for the first time, we score the game. So we give closing thoughts, and then we also give a final score, which ranges from 1 to 10. You can do point numbers like 1.5, 1.6, ones. I mean, for this game, of course, it'd be like higher than that. But you can use point numbers and then at the end, when we post everything, I conglomerate them all together and
sounds good.
A final score. So we usually start from the top. So that's Frank, as usual.
Yep, I am the trendsetter. A great story, which made up for a lot of sins, of obtuse puzzles and. Some tricky navigation issues, moving around and trying your patience with running miles at for no reason at all. Mm-hmm. Every time I had to go to see Flipper, I'm like, I have to go through three screens of nothing to get to him. But anyway, having said that, the story made up for and the dialogue and the ideas presented. I almost forgot to mention the hilarious twig men on the island. So I'd have to give it a 7.5 overall, I think.
Okay. All right.
Mostly on story. Mostly on the strength of story.
Okay. Okay. Kevin?
The story was good. The writing was a little bit of its time of development. Some of the puzzles were really frustrating as well. It's like really long drawn out animations and kind of wondering what am I supposed to do as you take 30 minutes to walk across. So, but I did get a lot of laughs.
Okay.
Crazy dialogue. So I'd probably have to give it a 7.5. Aaron.
Wonderful. And Chris?
So I think if I was scoring it back in 99, I probably would have given it a high, maybe a higher score.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time I was used to this type of gameplay of just really long stretches of just going back and forth between things. Now it holds up, but it doesn't hold up. One being, you know, the glaring difference of the graphics.
Yes.
You know, because it's a much bigger screen resolution on modern day computers and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, the other thing too is just such, like, and I said in the chat on Discord here that they should have named this exposition the game, because it is really chatty.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no short dialogue options. They just go on forever and ever and ever. I think they did an absolutely fantastic job of the lore of the worlds and everything. It just, they didn't execute it as well as it could be, and I think, you know, that's partly due to the time back then where, you know, everything was just thrown at you all at once, whereas now it's kind of like you kind of have to like spoon feed it a little bit of the time to us now. But other than that, I mean, it's a really enjoyable story. Really enjoyed my time back then playing it, and I had fun coming back to it and playing it now again, especially helping refreshing my memory and everything. Overall, I think I'd have to agree with Frank and Kevin and do a 7.5, but I'd have to extend it out by like a million decimal points at that point to just elongate the score. Also, it would have gotten an 8 if there were some dogs and stuff in there. But,
gosh, there was.
I mean, there was a bird.
I don't think there were any dogs. Like,
yeah,
none.
I mean, it was just basically the bird. And I don't think there were any other animals around.
There were no dogs. That's really weird. In a
place, I mean, there were the mole people, which I can't remember their actual name, but
wasn't like the Bandus.
The Bandus.
Bandus.
But I mean, they spoke, so it doesn't really count that much. So
they had the crabs.
Yeah, but they kind of had
their
own language.
They did not have the crabs.
Well.
You stop that, Frank. I'm
just kidding.
Great. Thank you. I enjoyed it. It was a good story. I really wish, which I need to be better at, I really wish I wouldn't have tried to fit it in all at once, and I think that would have helped my enjoyment of it a bit. You know, because by hour 20 I was ready to throw it. I was like, okay, let's get this thing done. But the story was very involved. Like, there was a lot to it. There's a lot of like history to the worlds that was very thought out. A lot of like, you know, prophecies and stories, and you know, just like the reading and the stories you would hear from people. There was a lot to go on. Like, there was a lot of writing that had to go into that, and and it wasn't really that. You know, everything fit okay together. Like, nothing, like, as far as, like, the mythos and the history for the two worlds, nothing felt, like, really out of place. It was just a lot of it. But I definitely, you know, I have to give them credit for that. You know, and even though there was a lot of dialogue, then it's overwhelming. Like, it was still kind of, it never felt, like, annoying. So that's another thing that's, you know, that I think this is pretty good for a game from 1999. Because I know that I've played other games similar to that time, and it's kind of like, oh, I can't really say the same for those. So, I mean, even though, like, with its setbacks of just, like, the time, you know, the year that it was made, and, you know, I think if I was playing it then, it would be pretty amazing. just, you know, time has not been very kind to it. So I would have to give it a, I think a 7.5. I think I want to stick with a 7.5. I'm a good 7.5.
Are you just doing it to make the math easier?
Well, no, I'm not. Honestly, because I think that Austin would have pulled that off. But no, I don't think it's quite an 8. I don't want to give it a 7 because it still has some good stuff. So yeah, I'm gonna.
You said you 7, think I'm gonna do what?
7.5. Well, we'll see, Austin. We'll see. You're next. You're next. Okay. So final thoughts and score.
Yeah. So as I said, I am looking at this like holistically, right? Like
yes.
in the context of having played the other one. So The Longest Journey is really like the Deus Ex Invisible War, the Deus Ex series. Like, I love it because it's part of the series and it does a really good job like exploring the world.
Yeah.
But it also like sets the, it really sets the, I guess like stage for everything coming. And then also it ties everything together. Like it's all like a thread that like, like a triple braided thread, right? Like they're all needed in order to make this work. That said, I do think it's the weakest of the three. Even accounting for age and everything like that, even if I was playing it in 1999, I still think that I can't really relate to April. Mm-hmm. I think some of the dialogue is needlessly wordy at times. Sure. I think they easily could have accomplished the exact same thing, getting across the exact same point in a less verbose manner, because I think brevity is something that is useful, and I definitely think that this game doesn't really understand that. I think that Ragnar had this like grand vision in his head and he just wanted to put all of it in this game at once. Yeah. And that's awesome, and like I love his,
yeah,
like getting to explore that later, but I think it was too much for one game. I do.
Yeah.
So again, that like I love exploring Arcadia. I think that is such a cool dynamic between like this world of magic and this world of science. And I really hope you guys like love delving into them deeper as we do the other ones later months. So all that said, I actually don't have as high a score as you guys do for it. I would give it a 6.5.
Okay.
And just because like I guess I'm not like super generous when I score games, but like I love The Longest Journey. Not saying I don't, but I would give it a 6.5 just because I recognize a lot of its flaws, but I still love it because it's part of this series and what it brings to everything else. So
Okay. Cool. I will read Madeline's rating. She did give me her rating for this. She gave it a 7 out of 10. And said that if she had played this when it first came out, that she was sure that she would have loved it, that age has not been kind, and so that she docked points for clunkiness that most modern point and clicks have been able to avoid. That's Madeline, who usually joins us, but she had family visiting this week, so she is excused officially. Can you guys still hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
We're just waiting for you to finish the thought.
Oh, sorry. I thought I exited out of the chat, and then anyways. So I will put all these scores together and post them later. Stanton will get the recording posted as well. You can find us at thegamechat.net. As well as we're on Stitcher, we're on Google Play, and we're also on iTunes. You can download our podcast format there. We're also under The Game Chat on Twitter and Instagram as well.
Also on the site, we now have a schedule of upcoming games.
Gotcha! So thank you, Stanton. If there's something
that you see that you'd like to be on and talk with us about the chat, about the game,
yes.
Send us an email, chat with us at thegamechat.net.
Yes. Thank you. perfect. Absolutely. Yeah. I took all the games that we voted on the last time, and guys, it took us all the way. I mean, I didn't post officially on Facebook like the entire schedule. I only posted until September, but we have enough games for the rest of the year. Like we're good. So thank you guys for joining and for chatting with us and for chatting about The Longest Journey. Is that we'll do Dreamfall, The Longest Journey, later on in the year as another month chat. Thank you guys so much. Oh, our next game for next week, we are discussing Captain Spirit, which is the next game from Don't Nod. And I have a link for that somewhere. But yeah, so that's what we'll be discussing. It's a very short game. It's free on Steam and else. If it's on anywhere else, I don't know, but it's a free thing, but it's only like an hour and a half long, I think. But it's supposed to be kind of a introduction into the second season, or kind of what will have clues in it for the second season of Life is Strange, which will be out later this year, or will start being out later this year, I think starting September. I'm excited to talk about it. I'm sure that there's a lot of feels. I'm sure that there will be a lot of tears, at least on my end of things. I'm super excited to play it. So chat with you guys next week. Until then, have a great week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.